Hey folks, thanks for pressing play. This is episode 12 of I'll Grieve You With This. It's the host, Micah Walsh. It's been a little while since the last episode. I, unfortunately, when you think about it, I don't have just a stable of grieving comedians to book on a weekly basis. Hopefully in the future, I'll release these in a more standardized timeline. But in the meantime, it's nice to see that people are still downloading the earlier episodes. Welcome, new listeners. This one's a long one. I had a nice conversation with comedian Patrick Sussmelch, a person who I've known for about 10 years through the comedy scene, but prior to this, we'd probably never spoken more than 10 cumulative minutes. And we had a nice conversation. We talked for a couple hours about some of our mutual dead friends and about his one-man show about grief. And I hope you guys enjoy listening to it. Without further ado, this is episode 12 with Patrick Sussmelch.
Yeah, dude, dead people, what's up?
Fucking A. So, thanks for doing the podcast. Dead people indeed. The weird thing about booking this podcast is it requires a bit of speculative funeral chasing on my part. Typically, when I see a comedian that I like post like an in memoriam, I go, oh, I'll approach them when enough time has passed.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that. Schedule sure. A little calendar alert.
I feel like such a fucking grief snoop or something. But in your case, I didn't have to because I came across the flyer for your show, the very excellently titled Text from My Dead Friends.
Yeah, I have had quite a few dead friends, as I'm sure you as well, as part of doing stand-up is having friends that die one way or another.
Of course.
Yeah, I think there's about six or seven people that I talk about in this show.
Wow.
And I don't know, like, if we want to go through it chronologically or
sure.
I don't know how this works.
Each one of these is different. I usually sort of try to let the interviewee sort of take the narrative. So
but
that's kind of a cop out on my part, huh?
Well, I mean, it's got to be also awkward as a host to like be like, yeah, so like, how much did you love your dad? Like that, like how do you
100%? We are in the interim period between pleasantries and absolute like burying our souls. Tell
me
first of all, how long have you been doing the show?
I've been doing the show. I think it's hard to explain that without just getting into it.
I think the
last person who died that was probably the most devastating, and it's Rogoff.
Our mutual friend, of course.
Minneapolis
enemy. Comedy great person.
Yeah, Rogoff Mehta. He died in March of 2019, which was pretty obliterative for me. He was like truly like a brother to me, but like we can get more into that. But just to talk about the show. There's a show in Los Angeles that I really like that's called The Internet Read Aloud, and it's a PowerPoint-based show where, like, usually you'll give, like, a PowerPoint about whatever dumb thing you're following on the internet, whether it's like, oh, I got really deep into, like, Jordan Peterson's Instagram, or, like, I did one on, like Flat Earth Theory years ago, where I just got deep into, like, the Flat Earth groups because they're just absolutely bonkers. And there was a show coming up in, I think originally October of 2019. And I was like, oh, maybe I want to do something about like texts from my dead friends. Like I have these, you know, just the nature of like being alive now in the 21st century is that like any correspondence you have digitally with someone is just like saved on a server farm in Utah or Arizona or something forever. And like, I thought about just doing something with that. Like I had, you know, these texts from Rogoff for these other people. And like, I just kind of turned it into more of like a memoir of, I guess, the past few years of my life, just with like these various photos from all these people or other people who are not dead, or some people who are dead to me. I assembled it. I was working on it. It was originally only 30 minutes long. I ended up the first time kind of giving myself a panic attack and putting myself into kind of a little bit of a slight dissociative episode. And I had to like be like, hey, I can't actually do this show.
This was the very first time you tried it?
This was the very first time. It was for Internet Read Aloud. It was a half hour version. Asked to reschedule it to, I think, November, whatever.
And this was in 2019. So this is about 6 months after Ragoff Fest. Is that what
you're saying? about 6 months after. I think I was like, I'm ready. In hindsight, probably no, not ready.
Sure.
And like, yeah, working on it did kind of put me in a real, I shouldn't say it put me in this headspace. I think I revealed the headspace that I was currently in. And like, I remember just like truly dissociating at a D&D group. There's a friend of mine, Dylan, a friend of his, who would have like these monthly D&D sessions where just like a whole bunch of people come, and it was like, you know, fun. This was the October one where they do like a Tomb of Horrors thing. But I remember just, and I didn't even know Dylan this much at that time, but I was just like, hey, I think I'm dissociating or whatever. And he's like very sweet, like gave me a back rub or whatever. Very sweet and helpful.
Dissociating, this is like a panic attack or something, or
it's kind of like a panic attack. It's vision. I think like for difficulty. I think dissociating means something different for other people, but I think in its most basic form is basically like how I would describe it for me is that somehow, and there's no way to explain this that makes sense, but it didn't feel like the body I was inhabiting was mine. Like I would like look at my arms and move them, but I'd be like,
sure,
this is some sort of alien creature, like in a way becoming very aware that you're like a brain inside a skull piloting a meat mech.
That doesn't
something.
Sound crazy at all. Honestly, the first the first time I had a panic attack, I like literally just was like, oh wow, I can't really see that well, but I can see totally fine. It just feels like I'm looking through a lens into what my vision is, like looking down at my hands and stuff, being like, when movies try to recreate what the first person perspective is, and it looks like strange because they can't get the dimensions right. So this is your experience.
Kind of like
you're experiencing like this on like stage.
Get Out. No, this was just in. This is just like at a hangout with a friend. This was like, I think a little bit before I was.
At the D&D thing.
Show.
Right.
Yeah, and so like I was like, hey, I can't. Let's reschedule this. Which worked out well because the next month, some people dropped out of the show last minute, so I was able to do like this half hour presentation for the show just through sheer happenstance of scheduling. Another mutual friend, Chloe Radcliffe, was in the audience because she was visiting LA from New York. And like in some ways, Chloe features kind of prominently because she helped me a lot when Ragoff died. And like, I don't know, a lot of people that were in the audience were like, you know, some people got like sad and some tears, but people were like, this is really good. Like you should do this again. And I was like, I'm not ready to do this again.
Sure.
But after a couple months, I was like, no, I should do this again. Was like working on a longer version and had plans to do it as like a one-person show in, I was setting this all up in like February, March of 2020. And I was like, okay, June 2020, I'm going to do this one-person show. And then, you know, the venue closed down, who knows why.
Oh, you didn't want to do it on Zoom? You didn't want to do this deeply vulnerable act via Zoom?
No, that would be brutal. Like, I've done Zoom comedy or whatever. Like, I think it's fun because you can do the share screen. I, like, would give, like, stupid fucking PowerPoints. You can't hear the other people's reactions. So to just do an hour-long...
I understand
presentation of all my, yeah, but and also I don't know if you had the same feeling when during the pandemic I had absolutely no goddamn urge to do anything creative.
Ooh, me either,
I was like the most creative I got was Minecraft. That is as creative as I got. And then
I I built a bench that was not, it was not level. That's about the extent of my creativity.
What kind
of, like a bench out of 2x4s. I was like in the woods. I was like, oh, cool. Maybe I'll
build. Oh, you're in the woods?
Yeah. I went up building to Maine benches? For some of, for like 8 months of the pandemic.
God, I wish I would have had an option to do that. I ended up getting really deep into hiking.
The Hollywood Hills?
No, the Hollywood Hills are trash. And okay. People who say they hike and they hike there, they're trash. You got to go to like the Angeles National Forest or something.
Drag them.
Yeah. Hey, everyone who says they like hiking, you don't like, I'm going to gatekeep hiking on the podcast.
Yeah.
Name three trails.
But there's no way that the Hollywood Hills doesn't have Google reviews, because like, I like looking up Google reviews of like natural things. Like there's Grand Canyon reviews, like 1-star reviews. They're like, oh, it wasn't.
Yeah.
That, wasn't that.
No, neat. I love that.
I'm like, oh, well, okay.
Why I've seen you, bigger.
Like, why are you writing reviews of the woods? Like that's.
Yeah. Really I can't imagine going to the Grand Canyon and being so upset by it. You log into Google.
Sure. Like, yeah.
I'm going to shut this canyon down, fill it up, put a Best Buy in here. This is useless.
Yeah. Can I speak to this canyon's manager?
So
the original one manifested in the fall of 2019. You said you did one.
Yeah. Fall of 2019 pandemic happened. The original venue that I was going to do the long version at shut down and got new owners, and they were digging through their emails in like late 2021. And they're like, hey, do you still want to do that show? And I was like, I guess, sure. So oh, we said nice.
So it was kind of laying dormant in your brain then, or you didn't have plans?
Yeah. Laying dormant. Like I would think about it. But it wasn't until maybe like November, 2021, they're like, hey, do you want to do this show in like February? And so, yeah. So more like that, like looking through old texts and like setting it up. And it was a much different experience after that. Like a much more time had passed and I was much more, I don't want to say healed, but the grief wasn't as dominating as it was. Like it was a lot easier to work on it.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the time does dull the pain.
Time truly does dull the pain, baby. But, yeah, I think unless you have any other questions, I think maybe just go into it chronologically might help.
Yeah. Let's start it off. Who was the first chapter in the
first chapter? And I can't remember
anthology.
If you were doing comedy at the time. Do you remember Kate Urquhart?
Sure. Yeah. So I started. Yes. Oh, yeah. A little backstory. Just a cursory intro about you or a bio. Minneapolis comic, now in L.A.
You've now been in LA
for a very long time. You were
too long, I guess, since 2007.
So you were a bit of a veteran when I started in 2011, but we both are expats of the Minneapolis scene.
Truly expats. I don't even do that much performing. I don't even know if I still count as a comedian.
Yeah, that's fine. Most of my favorite Minneapolis comedians have gone on to quit comedy.
It's truly the final form of comedy. It's not a Netflix special. It's quitting and going to the woods.
It's unfortunate because, man, there was such a well of talent. And there still is out of Minneapolis. But in any case, let's bring it back. 2011. Yes, I do recall Kate Urquhart. She was
Kate Urquhart. And yeah, very sweet. She's another comic. She had
cancer, right?
Cancer. Yeah, like we would occasionally see each other in person at like shows and stuff and like hang out, but like we mostly talked online, and that was partly because of just my mental health, especially at the time. Like leaving the house was kind of a chore for me, so like there'd be frequently she'd be like, hey, come hang out at my pool or whatever, and I'd be like, I don't want to leave the house. So mostly just like, yeah, just a lot online. of chatting. Like I would I complained about girls so much to her, which I think is helpful. Like Kate was a lesbian, and I think having like an older than you lesbian, you need that in your life. You need that experience.
Yeah.
Very, very like helpful. And yeah, she ended up, getting cervical cancer, which, the treatment was going relatively well. It had ended up spreading, I believe, to her liver. So like like all the treatments I think were targeted more towards the cervix. So she was like, yeah, like the cervix is looking crisp, my guy, but the liver's got a little bit of that.
That is how she talked.
That is how she talked.
She was like, it's stage three, my dude, but no cap. We're going to hit it with some radiation. Yeah,
for real. She truly was ahead of the game.
Her cervix.
The cervix was pristine, but the.
That was a little more her a little vocabulary.
I could pull up the presentation and tell you her exact words, but it had spread to the liver. And again, like the prognosis was more or less positive. I do remember that her prognosis of survival was 69%. And I was nice, dude. Fuck
yeah. All right, cool. You have 420 months to live.
Oh, shit, doc. Hell yeah.
This is more like weeks in reality, but
yeah, 420 months would actually be like,
yeah, that's a lot of time. That's 30 years.
I don't think it's, yeah, that no, that maybe. Way. I
would 400 divided by 12. All right, who's got a calculator? Who's faster?
Yeah, somebody pull up a calculator. 420 months.
Jamie, pull that up.
Jamie, can we get that up? I accidentally searched that in Bing. Yeah, it would be 35 years.
All right, actually, not bad for mine.
Yeah, that's both of our prognoses at this point, I think.
Well, in any case, 420 is just what I was trying to shoehorn into that sentiment.
It's a good bit, and I really hope you leave the quiet math portion into the... This podcast will be 4 hours long. Everybody.
I don't edit.
Yeah, get a snack.
I actually don't even know how to edit.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's recording.
Yeah, most of the first 10 minutes of every episode is just me checking the mic.
But yeah, so it is spread, and... And again, it was not necessarily like it's like the ideal is no cancer. But as far as like a cot cancer, like not the worst case in the world, like you just need more treatment, more chemo and stuff. And what had happened is that when you're going to get like a lot of chemo, I think the standard procedure is you get a rather than trying to like find a vein every time that you get like a subcutaneous port put in. So basically like the Matrix kind of you get like a port that has like a direct line to like one of your not your aorta, but like one of your big veins. Well, I forget, remember the name of the big veins, you know, the big boy veins. And what had happened is that probably because of the previous rounds of chemo and just being in a hospital setting, it got infected. So she became septic. And like I think she was put in an induced coma, which then was like, I think it was like, oh, she's not coming out of this. And I chose not to, like a lot of people went and visited her in the hospital. I chose not to because at the time I was like, she wouldn't want me to see her this way. But like this is 12 years later. So now it's like, oh, I was afraid. I was just afraid to like see my friend hooked up to a bunch of machines.
You were afraid of what it would look like.
I think more just, I think especially when you're younger, the like really being confronted with mortality in general is just really scary. When you're like, you're 23 and you're everyone, I'm gonna live forever, all my friends are gonna live forever, and then like to see like truly how fragile life is, I think I just wasn't ready for it. And there was a guilt that I held on to, I think, for a while for that. And there was a memorial show at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy.
Sure. Mall of America.
You know when you want fourth a floor. Memorial. Yeah. I can't think of a better place than Rick Bronson's House. Yeah,
right down from Dick's, whatever it's called.
Dick's Last Resort.
Oh, yeah.
There was the Hooters was there.
Yeah, so, I mean, what else do you want?
Just that aggressive blue lighting in the, like, burger area. Just for people that haven't been there, like, imagine if cocaine was a comedy club. And that is how I would describe Rick Bronson's House of Comedy.
That's not inaccurate.
It's like if you're at the mall and you're like, what if I could do cocaine in the 80s? Go to Rick Bronson's House of Comedy. So there was a big show, and there was like, you know, I was on it. I think I was wearing my Vote No shirt. because this must have been right around the time when
2013, 2012.
Yeah, I think it's like 2012
when Minnesota was legalizing gay marriage.
Yeah, when like Republicans made this big gambit where they're like, well, we'll put it to a vote and then the people will vote down gay marriage, which backfired, thankfully. So we had, as Minnesotans, we had gay marriage before like Los Angeles, which I think is funny. Fucking super take liberals. That, LA. It's ultra liberal. And yeah, like I think Rogoff was on that show too. Like this is when I really was just starting to like hang out with Rogoff. And I remember they got Maria Bamford to come headline the memorial show, which was
yeah, that's great.
You know, huge, like at that time, like I never get. Really great, huge get. I didn't really like, I knew who Maria was, but I hadn't really like watched her perform. And like, that was the first time I saw her perform. And it was very sweet of her to just come out, I think for free and perform. Like, I know, I think.
Had Kate maybe opened for her before?
I don't know if Kate like opened. That. I just knew that Maria was truly like one of Kate's favorites. And I think Kate's partner, Barb, reached out. Cause I know there's some pictures of them together from like, they'd go to like Max FunCon and then Maria would be there. I don't know if Max FunCon still exists. It must.
I'm not familiar with Max FunCon.
Maximum Fun. That's like the podcast network, right? That I think like the like McElroys are on or something. You don't know?
Nah, man,
you want to be a podcaster?
This is all over my head. Yeah, I'm doing a podcast and I just did a physical thing on an audio format. Clearly, to the people listening at home, I just slowly dragged my head over my head to convey this one's going over my head. Sorry. Yes. All no, of my.
So, right. So, anyway, so there's a convention for all the Max Fun podcasts that I guess they hung out with Maria at. So, Maria came. I don't remember her set, but I just remember leaving the show. And, like, obviously, it was like all mostly comics of varying levels were in the right. audience and some like family and friends. And I just remember outside Maria was just standing in like the burger bar area, which is the weird patio of Rick Bronson's
the indoor patio,
the indoor outdoor patio that is then further out is the rotunda. So it's very strange setup. But yeah, so I just remember like all these comics, like just crowding around Maria, like wanting to talk to her. And I just remember like just Maria just sitting there looking so,
it's not her moment. This is,
it's not her moment. Like feeling very uncomfortable. And I think there was a, like, we kind of like locked eyes and I was like, and then I just like left and went home. Cause I was like, I don't want to talk. Like, yeah, I know Maria's great and famous, but I was like, I have absolutely no urge.
Well, also that's not the context for being like,
it's not the context.
Hey,
it's like
you grieve here often. Like you can't exactly saddle up next to them. Like
I'll be here all week.
If you need anybody else at your next, you doing any funeral gigs?
If you're doing any other memorial shows, like
doing the old circuit, the old wake.
Yeah, if you're doing the memorial circuit, like I got bagpipes, you know, right. I know all the classics.
I got a bugle, I can do taps if it's military.
Need a bugle. You know? Hey, I got guns. You need me someone to shoot guns? I got guns.
Yes. A little 21 and gun salute.
And I remember there was a person who at the time I was kind of dating and now we're just friends, but her name's Liv. I remember she wasn't gonna go to the memorial because she had a prior engagement and like I really wanted her to go because like I was like, I'm gonna be sad. But like again, when you're only like 22 or 23, your brain's not fucking done growing. So rather than just saying like, hey, I would really appreciate your support at this. I was just like, she was also trying to do stand-up. I was just like, hey, you know, Maria's gonna be there, like it's gonna be a great place to get.
Oh god. So good networking.
I pitched it as a networking event, which to her credit, she did not take me up on, but
good for her.
Yeah. And like,
but I'm sorry that you had to grieve solo.
Yeah, it was pretty solo. And I think part of it was also that because Kate and I mostly spoke online because I was a very reclusive person until relatively recently, me in life. I don't know. I felt like I wasn't allowed to be publicly sad because I was like, part of me was like, oh, I wasn't a good enough friend of hers to be sad, which, yeah, in hindsight is dumb. Like, yeah, we talked online. That's important. That's real. But at the time, sure. I was like, this has got to be just for me. Because, like, yeah, it's like there was Barb or like Andrew Brennelton. Like, they were all like, you know, pretty destroyed.
So you thought you weren't close enough to publicly.
Yeah, there was a part of me that was like,
is part of you tied to the like the fact that you are a public sort of a public figure in that you do stand up? Because like publicly grieve. When I think of publicly grieve, I think of a man weeping on the subway steps. I don't think of like, right. Oh, there's Patrick at the fucking wave. Hey, why is he here? He didn't know her as well as I did.
How did he get this?
yeah. No, I just, who's he fucking to get this wake? But I don't know. So you just, you didn't think that it was your place to publicly be there.
Yeah. Like, at like, at like, I just didn't feel like I had the right to be like,
okay,
as sad as I felt at a memorial or like, you know, the post hangouts or like to reach out. I was like, oh, this is just something I got to go do at home, basically.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Sorry for yawning. I was at an Apple store for 4.5 hours.
That'll put you to sleep. Okay. So Kate.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Kate Urquhart.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
She's pretty young too. She's basically, I mean, I thought she was older at the time, but she's basically probably close to our age or maybe a couple years older.
I think at this point she's more, I think maybe a couple years older than us.
Yeah.
Which
is very funny. Nice person.
Very, very funny. You know,
so you include, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, very rarely do you meet someone who wants to do stand up and their like joy of stand up is so like earnestly pure, like, sure. Like truly just like loved the craft. Wasn't a person that's like, I'm going to be famous or I'm going right. to, like, I'm going to turn this into a writing career. It's just like, this
it's
is
all
a
about
thing
the joke
that I enjoy. Yeah. It's very, definitely in LA rare to find, maybe not as much in New York, but,
no, there's certainly, yeah, it's interesting when people are just like, oh, wow, you're really just doing it for the love of what you get out of it.
Yeah.
Like, and, okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's refreshing.
And part of the show is that like, I usually show like, here's the last correspondence we ever had. And the last correspondence we ever had was like maybe a week or two before she died. And I'd asked her if she had seen the remake of Total Recall because I wanted, okay. I wanted to talk about, the three-breasted lady.
Sure.
And I just wanted
you
to,
like, needed your lesbian mentor to
I needed
sort of
my lesbian mentor to talk about fake boob tech with.
Understandable. And what was her response? This is the last communication you had?
Last communication. She did not she said I hadn't seen it. And then like, and I think pretty shortly thereafter was when things really took a nosedive.
It's interesting how anticlimactic some of your last interactions with people can be, because especially when it's unexpected, you're just like,
yeah,
I really had plans on continuing this conversation.
And
I've discussed it before on the podcast, but it's interesting when someone's last tweet basically becomes their epitaph online. You're just like,
yeah.
And you're like, well, here's frozen the moment that, you know, that we never thought.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard to accept to just be like,
yeah,
you their last tweet is about like Key and Peele or something. You know?
Yeah. You toss out a dumb bit or something and you're like, oh, and this is me forever now.
Right.
Again, on some server farm in the desert.
Totally. I'm like, oh, here's a dumb pun. I step out in traffic, get hit by a car. I'm like, damn it. This was not exactly what I wanted to be my legacy, my pinned tweet.
But yeah, pinned tweet.
That is kind of where we're at. Okay.
Yeah, it's nuts. And like, and you can get your, if your Facebook, like almost turned to memorial, like, I don't know if you've noticed, like on Kate, like now it says like remembering Kate sure. Urquhart, which I think you have to like, someone's got to do some kind of petition or something. But yeah, it's just kind of weird, like doing this show, like going back and looking at stuff and just being like, oh, like this person's always just going to look really grainy in photos because like we were all using like fucking iPhone ones and
sure.
shit. Like this, like it's just kind of, it's nuts. Or like the other thing, like to go back and like, and we kind of touched on it, like the idea of like, I'm getting older, but they're staying the same age. which is very.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. That's yes, the thing about do. My dead friends. Deceased and confused. No, that is absolutely.
Oh, man. Put that as the episode title, Deceased and Confused.
Yeah, I should, man. I stopped naming them after like the first eight. Because I was like, I had all these puns. I had all these puns, and I was like, none of these really apply to the tenor of what this show has become.
Oh, like, no, just make it as dumb as hell.
Sure. I do like Deceased and Confused.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good bit. You're right there with the Matthew McConaughey reference.
Right. But they do stay the same age. I cannot hear the, it's like a Manchurian candidate trigger. I'm like,
right.
Did you say they get older and what stays the same? Excuse me? I have to kill fucking Ted Cruz.
Please do. If you could do that, that would be great. Like, Ted Cruz isn't the first on my list, but he's on the list.
Yeah, you know, he's not the first of mine either, but, you know, it's not linear, you know? Sometimes I start out FBI, with number eight.
For all the FBI agents listening, 100% serious. Please come shoot me.
Honestly, I could use the promo.
Oh, at this point, if I got raided, that'd be huge for my career. That a live tweet that raid, that'd be...
Yeah.
So massive.
What thought did you have that I hijacked before this? Oh yeah, our friends die and they stay the same age.
Yeah,
that is kind of fucked up. And I feel the same way about celebrities where I'm like, oh shit, I'm older than fucking Amy Winehouse when she died by about 8 years.
It's nuts. Older than Jim Morrison. I mean, like, I was a pretty depressed teen in early 20s. Like when I turned 30 and I was in my 30s, I was like, boy, I didn't have a plan for this.
Sure.
Shit. To go to the next person who died after that, I believe was Gus Lynch. If you remember,
of course I remember Gus Lynch. Gus Lynch is he was a good influence on me. He was the first very funny person in the Minneapolis comedy scene who, apropos of nothing, gave me compliments and gave me accolades when I first started. And that was a real big thing. Every time I saw him, he's like, what's up, Mike? Are you still funny? Which is that's a weird fucking way to.
a lot of it is like,
but it did like
vibe and stuff. Like, yeah, Gus is like, he's a very large man, but he's also like one of the like sweetest men you'd ever meet, especially doing comedy. This was right around when Minneapolis comedy still had a bit more of a toxic street. Gus was very sweet. Like, you know, I was still living with my dad in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Gus also lived in White Bear Lake. So like, you know, we would get lunch and stuff and just like hang out. Same thing, like one of the first people that was like very complimentary of bits, you know, like, you know, had good advice. When I was running over, when I did Last Comic Standing and I was like running my set over and over at different places, like he had some pretty good, you know, thoughts on the set I was running. Like, I was originally going to do some other jokes that I used to like bookend. And he was like, don't, you're better than those jokes. Right. I don't know if you remember my old Tetris jokes. But he's like, yeah, don't do those on TV. And like, I mean, I think at the time I was like, huh, I like those jokes, but like, I trusted him. And like,
sure.
Looking back, I'm like, yeah, those jokes don't.
They don't stand the test of time. Fair. But yeah, Gus was a big influence. He was also a very funny guy. He was a great performer. Funny. I don't know. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that had he not died, he probably could have gone on to be like a larger personality on the national spec. I don't know. Like, he was very
I definitely think he had the capability of doing it. I think he was very, you know, dedicated to his kids, so I don't know if he would have ever like fully gone all in on like touring or something, like, but like maybe if he would have gotten, you know, a writing job
something. I mean, that is strange to say because there's so many fucking talented people that I know that I thought should be on TV by now and they haven't, but Gus was, he was just a very good writer and he was a really good performer. He was real fucking, he even to shitty rooms he would bring the energy.
He's a very good actor if you've ever spoken to him about acting.
Like, yeah, he was a community theater, a local
community thespian. Theater that's
oh wait, like, no, excuse me, he was in a bunch of movies.
He used to live in Canada when there was a lot more stuff being filmed in Canada. He was in a lot of movies and TV shows.
He was in my most favorite skateboarding movie, Most Vertical Primate. MVP 2,
Most Vertical Primate. Yes, yeah, do talk about it. I talk about it in the show.
Yeah, you know what? He was in Baby Geniuses also. So he has a storied.
Oh, yeah. He was resume. In some like in Babylon North Country, 5 I believe. Thing.
He was in? He was in also one of the Jason movies. Like, he's Jason in also one in the space.
He is in one of the Jason. Like, no. He's like one of the first people that gets killed in like one of the Jason movies.
I totally undersold his acting fucking resume. Sorry.
He did commercials.
Community theater.
I mean, I think he did also do. This guy's basically Tom Cruise. he did like commercials. Like there was this is an old Mike's Hard Lemonade commercial that was like a Super Bowl commercial where he's like a lumberjack like cutting around and then like someone says his name and then he accidentally cuts his foot off and he's like, ah, geez, my wife just got me those boots. Like it was like a really popular commercial.
Solid
like 15,
paycheck,
20 years ago.
I would imagine.
Yeah. And especially in the 90s, a Super Bowl commercial, that's like you wouldn't have to work again.
Sure.
And I mean, maybe that's how he got his house in White Bear Lake. I don't know. But I think he eventually moved back because I think so many Americans were moving to Canada to work on stuff that they're like, okay, Canadians only or something. And okay. It's a nightmare to get citizenship. Not sure why he chose White Bear Lake, but yeah, like he's really helpful. Like, you know, dumb bits, like at one of the, like at the Comedy Corner Underground, what was it? One of the, do you remember the fake award show, the Reapies?
The Reapies, sure.
Yeah, there was
Chris Maddock and Gus and
Chris Maddock, Gus,
Wayne put it on.
Wayne Berfine. I feel like
for those who don't, Peabow was in there too.
Peabow, yeah.
For those Patrick who don't Brian know, Bauer. Yeah, Gus wasn't the producer,
right? But yeah, there's one where they like had like, and this is part where it comes from the bullying aspect. But one of the awards was like, who would win in a fight? Would it be Patrick or a sack of panties? And then Gus came out dressed as a sack of panties and like, you know, threw a fight. And then we had this like stupid, it was a really dumb bit. This is like 2013. All right.
Yeah. We were so young.
Comedy has really changed in the past 10 years. Like you ever go back and watch like a YouTube video you used to think was funny from like 2013. And then this is just hate speech.
Right. No, you're not wrong at all.
Describing 10-year-old bits doesn't work, but there was with Dan Schlissel and Stand Up Records, they would have the Akumal Comedy Festival that I was invited to frequently, and I never went because one, I just didn't really have the money, and two, again, this is still at a point where I was like afraid to leave the house, so leaving the country, forget about it. And that's, I think, because I think his family had some property down there, but that is ultimately where he ended up dying. They were in the, it was this, him and his family were in the Yucatan Peninsula. And my understanding is that he fell off a pyramid.
Yeah.
And then was pretty fucked up by it physically. And then I probably also emotionally. And then I think during one of the many operations they were trying to do, I think he had like a heart attack or something. I don't know.
I think he went into cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
I think it was, he broke his leg in the fall. And actually in the interim period, it was like someone posted like, hey, Gus broke his leg. And I remember Bob posted like, feel better. And then I was
damn.
Like, right. Yeah. Of course. So type that hindsight.
Was it just like, it was more serious than they thought, or was it just like,
no, I think he went to a hospital in Mexico and he had surgery and the surgery went well, but he went into cardiac arrest.
Because
he was a, you know, a robust man and probably
a robust,
you
know, man. Yeah.
He was, but I do not know. I don't know the story, but I what I heard was he broke his leg. He fell off a pyramid and ultimately he died in surgery, from heart failure, which was like fucking insane.
Truly insane.
And that was really, really hard to believe at the time. And then, of course, you get the news via social media, because where else do we get the news in 2013 or now?
Yeah, you just see everyone posting and you're like, what happened? Like,
right, there's a bunch of memes. Wait, Mr. Bean died?
Oh, my God.
This is how I fucking find out.
No, not Rowan Atkinson, the star of Man versus Bean.
Right. I'm like, why is Crispin Glover trending?
No, Crispin. I will be fucking wrecked when Weird Al dies if I don't live with him. I'm going to be absolutely fucking destroyed.
There's definitely going to be people where I'm like going to be devastated and I've never met them. And I'll find out via Twitter, via a fucking meme.
Truly through some sort of dumbass meme. But yeah, and that was, I think, the first like of deaths that I've of people Gus I know. Was, that was like the most like sudden
up. That was pretty point. Profound for me. When yeah. Gus died, that was kind of hard to believe. And then, of course, 2 weeks later, Bill Young died.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how close you were with him, but those he was also just a figure who was very funny mm-hmm. and, you know, nice to me when I first started. And geez, he was 32 when he died. I'm like, it's insane. Bill.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Bill. Yeah. Bill's the yeah. And this is the next in the thing. Yeah. It's nuts. Yeah.
It's kind of a 1-2 thing.
It was a 1-2. Yeah, I mean, just in the for the sake of chronology.
We'll, yeah, I don't mean to gloss over anything.
No, that's totally
Gus that, yeah, like, stuff.
Yeah, I mean the Gus stuff. Well, the Gus stuff was just kind of weird because it was just like he's just dead. Like I didn't really like I saw him like, and then he went on what should have just been like a vacation, and then it's like he's gone. Like I didn't really, you know, I didn't.
That was your first sudden death. It was different than
first
Kate.
Sudden death. Kate was like. Kate was sudden, but there was the like period of the intubation and stuff. And then they're like, the message is like, hey, we've removed the tube and we're just basically waiting for nature to take its course. This was just like, oh, he's dead now. And like, there'd been, and you know, like I've had grandparents die up until that point, but like, this sounds cruel, but like, in some, like when you're in some way, there's like the tacit understanding that like, if everything goes according to plan, you're going to outlive a grandparent or something.
That doesn't sound cruel. I mean, no, that's, I call them the stepping stones of grief. Cause it's like, they're the first fucking people that, you know what I mean? You're out. Oh, cool.
Their final
it's,
job.
It's the training wheels. Exactly. It is. I'll leave you with this. Here you go. Here you go. Here's a little dose of reality. Luckily you're not too attached to me cause I'm 80.
Yeah. And like, and there's a, when I was on student council in high school, one of the student council members' brother died. And that was like a whole, I was going to describe it as a whole thing, but that was also gosh, like,
yeah,
that was like I, as a person I maybe met once, but like when you're like 17, you're like, we can die.
Sure. Yeah.
Us, not us. That's for the olds.
Those kids become urgent urban legends. Like I'll never forget the people that died in my high school.
Yeah, this guy in high school, yeah, he also had cancer, and I think his dad was like a state senator or something. Like
fucking legend, right?
Fucking legend. Well, like as he was going through treatment cancer, and stuff,
his dad's a senator.
Yeah, absolute fucking legend. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna. I won't say his name. I don't know why. No one cares.
He's part of your narrative in this.
He's not. I was like, I'm so not close to this person. I was like, sure. I don't. And like, this is before we had a written record of every interaction we've ever had with anyone.
So your show, let me ask you. So it's like, it's has like a visual aid, like a PowerPoint.
PowerPoint that has over, for a period, it did have 420 slides.
Oh, wow. That's because
I, it was originally 418, and then I was like, I got to do it. I got to go for it. I got to add.
I was just overwhelmed by how many it was that I forgot my cardinal thing where 420 expires my Manchurian.
Yeah.
Thing.
Oh, should we do a retake?
No, that's fine. But that's a lot of fucking slides is the point
that's
of
a lot
my
of
reaction. I was like 400, even if you donate it, like use 10 seconds on each, that's a lot of fucking, we're not going to bring out the calculators again.
Right.
But
I mean, I blow through time. Some slides pretty fast.
Sure.
Where was I going with this? Oh, but yeah, like
420 slides.
Yeah,
it's visually supplied with the PowerPoint sort of
visually supply like a lot of like screenshots and you know other pictures and like I got bits in there too. It's like it's a funny show, but it's I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's funny, but like it is sad.
Yeah.
Actually, this last time I did it was the first time I did the show with someone in the audience who knew some of the people. Adam Quinnell came to the show, so sure. It was interesting, and like he liked it. And I was like, okay, because there's a part of me when I do these shows, I set the price to whatever the minimum the venue will let me set it to, because I was like, I feel weird. I'm not trying to.
You think it's a little self-serving what you're doing, or no? You feel weird because it's like profiting on off the stories of your dead friends.
Yeah, profiting off these stories, like, and I think it's a lot of it is from my point of view. So I'm not just like stealing other people's lives and profiting off it in the way that like maybe some Hollywood people, but it just feels like I'm not going to charge $20 for this ticket. Like that'd be, that would just feel weird.
Sure. So it's kind of the same way I would eventually sometimes like to fucking monetize this, what I'm doing here. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to bring commerce into my little tragedy interview zone. I'll wait for it to come to me.
Yeah,
that seems a little disingenuous.
Yeah, the fucking dead dad zone brought to you by MyPillow.
By Miller Lite.
Yeah, MyMillerLite.
Fucking MeUndies.com. Hey, let me tell you how dad's still dead.
Let me tell you how easy it is to make a website. Fucking go to Squarespace.
Squarespace. Jesus, what happened to them, man? They had the lock on the market for a while.
They had the lock. I don't know. Every time I listen to podcasts, now it's some meal box.
Right, right.
Hey, are you too busy grieving your dead dad to cook? Fuck. I don't know why podcast ads are all like weird New York accents.
That's probably the podcast that you listen to. I feel like my podcast ads are not read like that. I'm listening to This American Life. They're not like,
that's how Ira Glass does it. Not Ira. Is that Ira Glass?
Contributors like you.
Hey, go out and give a real fucking great. This is a good bit.
No, it's building.
Yeah. Give it time. God. Anyway, the last message that I exchanged with Gus was we were just talking more about the stuff he did. So he showed me this commercial that he had did for the first Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Okay.
He comes out with his kids and he's, cause like, it's like a kid on his computer, like playing Roller Coaster Tycoon. And then he like bursts in with his family. He's like, hey, my kids lost their lunch on that ride. And the kid's like, I thought they'd like the 17 loop de loops. And it's like a dumb fucking bit. But like, when that commercial was out, I saw that commercial a bunch. Like you would have think that I would like truly met like Andrew Garfield or something, but like, holy shit, that's you're from the Roller Coaster Tycoon ad. Huge fan of that game.
So you knew that you were familiar with the commercial long before you met Gus. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And same with like that, with that Mike's Hard Lemonade commercial. Like I remember they were like, funniest when Fox would have like the world's funniest commercials, when you would just watch a TV show that's just commercials.
Oh my God, what an era. Imagine if that was streaming on fucking Hulu. Hey, world's best commercials.
I know. Although there would be,
you have to watch an ad before you see it.
No, I mean, you would turn on the Fox and be like, oh shit, yeah, look at all these ads. And then they'd have the like regular commercials. Like, these commercials the fuck out of here.
And then they're like, Married with Children at 10:30.
Yeah, come watch Married with Children.
Yeah. See if this guy still hates his wife.
He does. Spoiler alert. Although I think now if you put like a best Super Bowl commercials from like 1995 on Hulu, I'd watch it. Cause like, what a time capsule.
Yeah. Budweiser.
The commercials that are still stuck in my brain. The commercial with Sears where their air conditioner is broken. And he's like, I'll call tomorrow. And she's like, you'll call now. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh yeah.
Where they're just like, oh, it's hot out there or whatever. Anyway. So that was Gus. I didn't get to go to the memorial because I had to go to New York City for something. Like I'd already had this trip planned and stuff, and I was like, I can't cancel it. And I was, you know, kind of bummed out in New York for obvious reasons. To the point where the person I was staying with was like, hey, you need to like leave the apartment. All right, fair enough. I think I'd just been there for like a couple of days, and she's like, hey, you should maybe go do something. Yeah. You're out of town. So I went to the Museum of Natural History, and it was at the Museum of Natural History that I started seeing on Facebook that everyone was posting about Bill. And I remember messaging Rogoff being like, did something happen to Bill? And he's like, oh yeah, Bill died. We're not supposed to talk about it. And I was like, well, people are not handling that correctly, cause I'm hearing about it. And the craziest thing is that like I had like ducked into like a little like side kind of stairwell to like message, because I was like, oh shit, Bill. And like as this was happening and I first found out that Bill was dead, a security guard like grabbed my shoulder and was like, hey man, we got to get out of here, the building's on fire. Because a fire broke out at the dinosaur exhibit that day at the Museum of Natural History. This guy grabs me. The news article and everything. This guy grabs me, grabs my shoulders, building's on fire. And I just started laughing because I said, of course the building's on fire. Because I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, the guy looked at me like I was insane. Like, I was like, oh, you started the fire.
Right. You're like, Bill's dead. Of course the building's on fire.
He's of course
like,
the who's, building's
who's
on,
Bill?
Who's Bill? The building's on fire. That was just a whole experience. Like you come out like just huge crowds. My favorite thing was that there was a man in one of those carts that sells pretzels. He like pulled up and he was just like, "Hey guys, I'm having a fire sale." And I was like, "Fuck yeah, dude! Nice. Fuck yeah! You better believe I bought a pretzel from that guy." There's one thing I respect, and that's grind. And yes. that man was hustling. He probably owns all sorts of NFTs right now.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So now it's Bill. Yeah. And Bill was a great guy too. He was a very funny fucking guy.
He's a funny guy. He's a sweet boy.
Very sweetheart. Sweet boy. Yeah. I didn't realize he was 32 when he died. I thought he was like 40.
I know. Yeah. I mean, when he died, I was like, what, like 25 or something. So like I think that was just at the point where I like stopped thinking of people in their 30s as ancient. But yeah, that was rough. Like, yeah, I have this video on Facebook that Rogoff took that like was like just like at one of like Bob's Christmas parties. Bob, who was the Bob runs Edwards. The Comedy Corner Underground, which is I would say probably the best comedy club in Minneapolis at this point.
Sure. Cosign.
He would have like these like, you know, get togethers on Christmas. And there was one of them where just Bill Young just had a Nerf gun, like one of those like stupid ones that has like 40 shots. And he just like absolutely laid into me. And I'm just like, what is this? Bill was gone. I was able to go to the memorial for that and stuff, but that was, were you there? Were you there for the 21 Nerf gun salute?
Yeah, that was really nice. I was out in the sticks or some suburb. I do remember.
Yeah,
that.
I was in a suburb.
The 21 Nerf gun salute. It was so perfect.
It was truly chef's kiss. I don't know who came up with that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That was good.
Bill is a unique case to the premise of the show is that we never actually really texted that much or anything. So normally at the part of the show where I say like, here's our last text, I take a moment to like, you know, basically telling people to like run an audit of your social media every once in a while, kind of like what we were talking about before. Cause like right now on Bill Young's Facebook, his work is listed as missionary at your mom.
Do you think that shouldn't be his epitaph?
I don't know. Like he doesn't get to choose now, but like every once in a while, look at your stuff and be like, is this what I want to be remembered for? I think that, honestly, Bill.
Oh, what did you want it to say? Fucking UPS? Like wherever he actually worked at, missionary at your mom. That's good.
It's just so funny.
He left us with a bit.
He left us with a bit, which is so perfect.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Bill. All right. Mm-hmm. Jesus. So we're about a third away through the Rolodex of your dead friends.
Yeah. We're about a third of the way in. Who is the next person? So I mentioned Liv before. She was the person that, I tried to get to come to the memorial by like being like great networking. You know, we'd been friends, but then like every once in a while we would maybe hook up, and that kind of like ended the friendship. And she was seeing someone who's an improviser who I met a few times. This person, I will admit, I wasn't as close with, but I think it's important for the overall memoir aspect because he ended up breaking up with Liv to he used to do heroin. He broke up to because he's like, I started using again. I don't want to put you through that. He overdosed. And I mentioned that because like that's what caused me to reach out to Liv again, was just like, hey, I heard about I'm not gonna say his name, so and so. And like, you know, I'm sorry, like that slowly is what rebuilt our friendship. And then after that, I started taking improv classes at Huge Improv Theater. My teacher, Samantha, for 101 or was it 201, she ended up dying in a car crash At this point, I'm starting to just be like, am I cursed? Is it just like interacting with me? It's like,
yeah,
bad. And like hindsight is like, no, doing stand up and like being gregarious, you just meet a lot of people. That's just going to increase your chances. But yeah, that was rough. The next death was my friend Marina Shaleen. She was someone that I had met after a show at Acme. I think I was featuring or something. And she was like really fun and nerdy. We're like chatting a bunch. We like ended up going to Christ, I can't remember. There was some restaurant that was nearby that like you gotta try these crab cakes or whatever. I'll never remember the name. It's written down in a journal somewhere, but like just like it was like a good time. We were hanging out with the friends. Like I thought she was cute. Like we made these plans to like go see Mad Max Fury Road. That was the movie that was in theaters at the time. I'd already seen it a couple times. She had already seen it 4 times. We were both just like, fuck yeah, let's go see this.
Oh wow, match made in heaven.
Let's go fucking see this movie. And we were, you know, instantly just like chatting a bunch. And right before we saw the movie, she was just like, oh hey, I just want to ask, like, is this gonna be like a date? And I was, you know, and I'm like, I hope it would be a date. And that's when she was like, I don't really, you know, I'm busy right now, I don't want a date, but I think you're cool. And like we had this really like sweet, awkward interaction. We're both just being extremely awkward, but like we did end up going and seeing the movie in like Roseville or whatever, because there's an AMC there. And like I have it written down in my journal, like it was a really nice time. Like at the time the mall had this like little train that was truly just child size that would roll around, that was called the Ladybug Express. And I remember we were just like overlooking it, making bits, because like Ladybug Express implies that there's like a local stops only, and we were just doing these bits as like a business child that accidentally got on the local stops only, be like, I'm gonna be late for my tantrum or whatever. Just like a dumb bit. But like yeah, we'd chat a lot or hang out. When Elliot Ray Hall released his first comic book, The Paybacks, I remember just texting Marina being like, where do I get these, where do I get a comic book, because she was like super into comic books, I was not. And she's like, oh, you can go to the Source, that's actually where I'm going now. And then I saw online that Elliot was actually doing like a signing at the Source, so like she went and got me Elliot's comic and got it signed by Elliot, and Elliot like wrote it like, Pat, let's be friends, and then his phone number and tweeted it out. And I was like, no, I thought we were already friends. And Marina's like, well, be better friends. Like, just like, yeah, just stuff.
So what happened to Marina?
So what happened to Marina is that her goal in life was to become a doctor. In the meantime, she had become an EMT, an emergency medical technician. And one night, she was a passenger in the ambulance. Someone else was driving. I think it was a 694 coming back from Monticello or something. The driver was exiting and then decided that was like, oh, I don't want to exit. So tried to pull back onto the freeway. And there was a stalled semi on the shoulder. So basically slammed into that at, you know, highway speeds, basically, right on the passenger side. And that's how Marina died, which was, I learned that because Elliot Ray Hall texted me, be like, hey, sorry, man. Or like, how are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm, you know, doing fine, I guess. Like, I didn't know when he texted me what had happened. I just thought he was like checking in, because like I was like pretty depressed, because when I first moved out to LA, things were not going according to plan. And then again, you go on Facebook, you see everyone posting, like, oh shit, man.
Right.
Fuck. Yeah, that one was, I think, definitely the most brutal up until that point.
Okay.
Like Marina, she's 24 when she died, which was just like,
that's pretty fucking young.
You know, just brutal. And like to die, like helping people, like to be like, you know, an EMT, like helping people, and to die, like, yeah, that kind of put me in a spiral, because here I was like just like this, you know, unemployed comedian, and I'm just like, man, there's truly no God or no, like, at the very least, no rhyme or reason to this. Like,
right, no as justice. Far as
no, yeah, truly no justice. Yeah. And that one was nuts because, that was a news story at the time in Minnesota. I don't know if you were still out here, if you were in New York at the time, but, yeah, like, texted my dad about it. And my dad's not great. And like, he just was, basically just relaying like pretty gruesome information from news articles. And I was like, hey man, you can stop with these details. But like, it was weird because like, I ended up flying back to Minnesota for the memorial and stuff. And people be like, oh, what are you in town for? Be like, oh, my friend, right, her ambulance hit a truck. And then people be like, yo, I heard about her. And it's like, I'm not here to like,
it's like they all have something invested in it, but it's not actual emotional. It's more like just human interest. Like,
yeah, it is. Oh, just wow. Like, yeah,
I saw, that on Fox.
I saw that on Fox, bro. And there was a point. Yeah. And there was a point where I was like, I need to see these newscasts. So I like went to like CBS or whatever's website to pull up her her article and watch the video of it. And I will not forget that before I watched the video of the gruesome scene where my friend died, I had to watch an ad for Young Sheldon.
Yes. Young Sheldon. Rest in peace to both of those things, your friend and Young Sheldon.
Is Young Sheldon dead?
I can only hope. Wait, you're in Los Angeles. You would have your finger on the pulse.
I think Young Sheldon still exists. I think Young Sheldon's still on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so removed from, I don't even own a TV.
Okay.
I just only assumed that Young Sheldon, apparently, but then again, Two and a Half Men is probably, you know,
yeah, there's
going to be resurrected in like 5 years.
They'll be like, yeah. Bring back that corpse. Hey, what if there's 12 and a half men? 12 and a half angry men.
12 and a half. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we both saw it. We were like, let's get this out of the way. Yeah,
Chuck Lorre, get in there.
Yeah, this is great for the thousands of people listening at home.
Okay. So,
I see this. Yeah, I see the news. Like, you see the scene, you're like, oh. And like, in some ways, yes, it was a little bit gruesome, but it was also like, a little bit helpful for me because you see the aftermath and you're like, oh, this was instant. You see the front of the ambulance, and the ambulance hit just on the passenger side, like the driver, minor injuries. But I was just like, you were like,
well, that's a consolation, I guess.
It's a consolation. It's just like, wow, you were absolutely obliterated
you blinked basically.
Yeah, there's a chance you didn't even know it was coming if you weren't, if you were like looking at your phone or something. Flew back for the memorial. That was at, I think, St. Andrew's Lutheran Church. And before that, I just went over to like one of her friend's place and we just like watched like her favorite movies and just like sat in silence, which was hard for a variety of reasons, but also like we had different tastes in movies.
Oh, okay. So like, what were you watching? Like fucking Wild Hogs or something?
Wild Hogs.
Oh wait, Santa Claus 3?
Wait,
Fred Claus with inexplicably Paul Giamatti?
Right. And Vince, just nothing but Vince Vaughn movies. No, it was just like Pacific Rim and like Pacific Rim 2, I think. And it's just like, boy, these movies in the best of times don't necessarily hit. And
when I'm missing my friends, I always watch War of the Worlds.
Let's watch all the Harry Potter movies. But yeah, the memorial was nuts. My dad gave me a ride. Like the whole massive parking lot was filled with like various emergency service technicians from across the state. Like there was an honor guard that was outside of the medical examiner's office that was just like standing watch 24/7 while they were like doing whatever with the body before it was cremated, when it was cremated and brought to the wherever the wake, whatever the memorial, you know, there was like a 30 vehicle procession of like, you know, ambulances, fire trucks, like cop cars. Like it was like,
right. It was like a fucking, you know, like she died
on duty. It was like a Kennedy died. And so like having to go through like traffic to get to your friend's funeral. And like, yeah, there's all these people like out in this, you know, massive parking lot. News crews were out with like big, huge fucking like long ass lenses. My dad's giving me a ride. Like you had to go like all the way around the parking lot to get up to the front, and like multiple times it's like, you can just let me out here. Cause like, I didn't want to like just start bawling, especially in front of my dad. When I finally got out, I was just like, thanks. And my dad like looked at me and said like, don't be a dick your whole life. And like, I like turned and like looked at him like a, like an animatronic, like all humanity left me. And I was just like, I'm at my friend's funeral.
Wait,
like,
what does that mean? Wait, why didn't your dad say that?
Cause I was being like terse because I was sad.
And you said thanks, and he said don't be a dick.
Yeah, because I was just like thanks. Like I don't know. Mm, I mean, that sucks. Like okay. That's like the ultimate. Sure.
That's, well, the that's ultimate a whole story. Other podcast.
That's a different story. That fucking... That's yeah. My dad sucks with Nikki Glaser. I don't know why I picked Nikki Glaser, but it's okay. Anyway.
Hey, fucking drag her.
Yeah, fucking drag that. No, Nikki's nice. I don't know why I would drag her. I met her once. I act like I know her intimately.
Nikki Glaser, I hardly know her. I met her once. Okay, listen, I saw an opportunity. I fucking took
it's in
it.
There get
we
it.
Need some take levity it. All right, man, you have you just told me about 7 dead people in a row.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna add a laugh track, but you know,
yeah,
I'm not reeling it out.
No, add a laugh track, add some like space slaps.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry this is ending up being so long.
No, it's okay. I mean, you got a lot of dead friends.
Hopefully
I'll cut it down. This will mostly hopefully just be about Gus Lynch. It's gonna be a mini episode about Gus Lynch. She's like, yeah, damn, it's 15 minutes.
Yeah, break it up,
man. And that's with the applause breaks that I add in.
Yeah, this one's gonna be for the Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and like there's a memorial. It was very sad. We come out, there's a fun bagpipe man plays bagpipes, because if you're in the whatever services, they like to play bagpipes. Sure. There was a 15 gun salute, which was absolutely terrifying. Some dudes like descended from a forested area, shot guns, did 3 volleys, and we're like, oh, what the fuck is that? And then just like back up into the woods.
Right.
There's a helicopter.
Cool. Who booked the by. Tactical unit?
Yeah, get the tactical unit. Just like, I don't know. It's I prefer the Nerf gun salute. I think it's a much better.
Well, if nothing salute. Else, it's fucking funnier.
It's 100% funnier.
So wait, where do they even shoot the 15 gun salute? Do they shoot it into the sky? They don't.
Yeah, they just kind of like aim into the sky. Like they're not like they're shooting blanks. Wait,
don't bullets? Oh, they're blanks. Never mind.
They're blanks, okay, which yeah, like sorry. We know are not 100% safe, but they were like pretty far away.
Alec Baldwin, we're talking about you, bro.
We're fucking on blast, Alec.
But seriously, I mean,
you can say weird shit on voicemails. You can be racist on voicemails and mean to your daughter all you want, but like, don't you dare shoot someone.
Dude,
you know, I think that's right. That you can't come back from that.
He's not going to, but
no.
Rest in peace to that DP. That's unfortunate. Listen, I don't mean to, this is the worst place to make light of a dead person, but in the context of this solemn podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and a part that really wrecked me. Well, one, they present the box that Marina's cremated ashes are to his dad and sister, or to her dad and sister. And then there was an ambulance parked right up there. And they, I forgot what it's called. It's all in the notes. But basically, they do like the last call out to someone where they like call out your name, like, hey, you know, like your number, like, hey, Marina, Shalene, please respond or whatever. And like, obviously, she's not going to respond, and then they say something nice, and they like basically the equivalent of like retiring your jersey. Like it's a very sad experience. I don't know why, but from the dispatcher's point of view, someone was in the dispatch room who was doing like, we just heard the audio, but someone was in the room recording it, and I found it on YouTube, and it's like truly breaking. And like I keep it, I have it in the show. Like I talked to a lot of friends about it. I was like, should I put this in here? It's like too sad. And people are like, no, put it in there. So I have it in there. And that's the point where like people in the show, like do start crying. And yeah, there was that. And then there was like, that was a more public memorial. There was a private memorial that then went to one of Marina's friends' mom gave me a ride. And on the ride, she found out I do stand up. And then she was like, oh, my favorite comedian is Louis C.K. And I was like, normally I would tell people like, oh, Louis C.K. sucks. But like this time I was like, whatever.
Right, right. You're like, yeah,
you can have this one. It was literally less than 2 weeks later when that New York Times article came out. Right, and I was right, like, right. Damn, dude, sorry.
Oh, you don't R.I.P. read the Times, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And that one was like, again, felt a little out of place because I wasn't like, I was living out here now. And like Marina and I kind of didn't talk as much, partly because like my girlfriend at the time, I think it made her jealous when I would hang out with Marina. So I kind of didn't hang out with her as much as I wanted to. I also have a lot of saved screenshots of text that I didn't use for the show that is just her asking to hang out. And they'd be like, oh, no, I got to go do this open mic. Or I got to go do this show. Right. Which just like, boy, in hindsight, does it feel dumb to like, oh, I could have spent more time. Had I known, like, I would not have gone to like the poorhouse or something.
Well, that's the thing about hindsight. You're like,
is that it's bad. Yeah. So this is private memorial. You know, they're playing soundtracks from Marina's favorite movies. So like, you know, Indiana Jones, Lord of the Rings, like those kind of stuff. Like she's a little like nerdy shit. Like she did cosplay. They had like some of her costumes kind of laid out. The Spider-Man one kind of was like really sad. Cause one, it's what she's wearing in her profile picture on her Facebook now. That's just always there. And two, like someone like very kindly, like, you know, it's like this like laid out on a table and someone took the hands, did like the thwip, you know, that's how he does it. So I was like, this like that like light touch really like fucked me up. And then there was like this like little visitation room with just the, you know, the box that Marina's ashes were in, which, yeah, I mean it's weird like to see like, oh, here's my friend. Now they fit in a cube. Which is weird. Like I finally went up, you know, to the box, like, you know, rested my hand on it. And like, for the most part, Marina wasn't like she wasn't like a touchy feely person. Like she didn't like to hug and stuff. So like I put my hand on the box and I was like, hey, I know you don't like to be touched, but, feel like it's okay in this situation. Sure. I'm just like, yeah, said some things. Like one of the things was like, hey, sorry you had to like leave before things got better, because this was 2017, like Trump was just, you know, just recently president, you know, back when, you know, we thought that was as bad as it was gonna get, you know. Oh, 27, like I would kill for 2017
salad now. Days.
Yeah, truly. And yeah, just like really lingered at that. Like I don't know if you've ever like been to a memorial and just like not wanted to leave, because it's kind of like, you know, like the memorial is kind of like this, like
it's the last, you know, it's like a reunion, you know,
it's like a reunion. I think the word for it is like a liminal space, where it's like a transitional space. And it's just like, you know, it's like, I'm not ready to just go live without my friend. Like I can be in this space and like, I don't have to be functional. I don't have to be happy. Just be sad. Like I'd just be like sad about my dead friend. But, yeah, it lingered a lot. There was another separate room where they were playing, so Marina would like do like little front facing videos that she would send her sister on downtime when they were doing like, when she was like doing her rounds or route or whatever, like, and she'd just make videos and she'd be like, I'm really bored. Like, which is good. That means no one needs help. But like, she just make these, you know, just like meandering self-facing videos. And I'd never seen them. So I just like sat down and watched them. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, something about my friend I never seen. And then there was a point where the videos started repeating. And that was that fucked me up. I started crying at that.
Cause you're like, this is the end of the reel.
Yeah. This is the end of the reel.
There's like, going to be more new stuff.
Yeah. No more new stuff. Mm. And just like really, really,
sure.
Yeah. It really fucked me up. And I got I asked Marina's best friend if I could take one of her comics that I still have a Wonder Woman comic from the funeral that I used to keep hung up. But at a certain point I was like, nah, I don't want this up anymore. So it's like very safely wrapped. Like I
sure
can look at it right now. It's in my closet. Yeah. And like called my dad and he picked me up and then he said, hey, sorry about earlier. I forgot you're not used to your friends dying yet. I was like, okay, dad.
What, does he just have a bunch of dead friends? He's the fucking seasoned vet.
I guess he has a bunch of dead friends. I don't know. He's in his 70s now. So maybe that's just what happens. I don't know. My dad's bad with emotions.
Well,
God. Yeah, this has been going a long time, but there's
So what's
there's
up?
Only one left.
I know it has to be the headliner, right?
It has to be. Please, fucking... you know, please welcome to the stage, Raghav Mehta.
Raghav Mehta, we all miss him so much. Yeah, Raghav. Yeah. That was pretty devastating.
Yeah, that was devastating. Raghav
died very suddenly, unexpectedly, about 3 years and some change ago.
Yeah, March 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was it. Like we talked constantly, like pretty much every day, just constantly like texting, just like about dumb shit. Or like we both pretty much confided in each other because we both kind of didn't really have families that we were close with and kind of had, I mean, despite being an Indian immigrant, like we kind of had similar backgrounds as ways like economics. Like we both were struggling money wise and didn't really have anyone to turn to. Like I know Raghav's sister had a lot of money, but she was not helping him in any way at the time. And I don't want to get into that. Cause that's not fair for her, but, yeah, just like constantly talking and like those few months before he died were both pretty bad times for both of us separately. I was really struggling with money. Like I was just having a hard time getting any sort of decent job. Like I was just doing like food delivery or like dog walking, which like are pretty brutal. Like you deliver pizzas and stuff. Like it's awful job. And like I had taken a seasonal job at Target that winter and like got fired from Target, which like is not good for like one.
How'd you get fired?
Well, like it was a seasonal job and like they're just like, hey,
it's spring. You're done.
It's spring, baby.
Hey, listen.
Get the fuck out.
What is it? The gopher that sees it? The gopher came out and it turns out you have to leave. We'll see.
You have to get out. Turn in your nothing. We don't even provide you pants or a shirt.
Yeah. Give us your fucking red polo back. Walk out shirtless.
But it's my polo, sir. Give it back.
Well, I'm so sorry
just
about
like,
that.
Truly struggling with money. Just like,
yep.
You know, there was a point where I never told my roommate at the time, but there was like just some points where I was pretty close to having to be like, hey, I can't pay rent.
You're like, hey, man, I've been stealing your food in small increments for the last year.
Oh, I just keep cutting it in half. And if I keep cutting it in half, it's never gone.
Right.
I never got to food stealing, thankfully. Definitely there'd be times where I thought about it, but I was like, I can't cross that line. But yeah, I think it was bad.
So you weren't doing that great. This is
I wasn't doing that great. Having a hard time finding a job. Like I didn't finish my 4-year degree. Like I have an associate's degree. And Raghav was just like, I don't know, man, just start lying on your resume. It's like what I do. Yeah. I'm like, huh? And sure. I did. And I got an office job that was pretty brutal. My job was there's the Camp and Woolsey wildfires here in California that like devastated a lot of communities. And then I was just in charge, like dispersing some disaster relief through the California Association of Realtors. But my job was mostly like people would have to send me pictures of their destroyed property and like take a statement basically. So I just spent all day looking and hearing about the worst day of people's lives. It was pretty.
Yeah. That sounds like a fucking fun job.
It was a pretty big bummer. I didn't learn until a couple months in that the last person that had worked that job, they had showed up because it was a temp job. They had showed up, worked, left for lunch, never came back. They just disappeared.
Sure.
And I was like, yeah, on some of those worst days, it's like if my first day would have been the worst day, I would have just fucking left. And like Raghav was doing, I think poorly, just, mental health wise in general. And then him and his girlfriend broke up.
Right. And they were having a hard time.
Yeah. They were having a really hard time with that. And like, I don't know if Rogoff was using drugs. Like, he's pretty, he talked about it on stage, so I don't feel talking about it, but like, he used to do heroin and like pills and stuff. I don't know if he was currently doing it. Like, there was a period where like my anxiety was so bad in the weeks before his death that he was like, I'll send you some Xanax, dude. And I was like, I don't know if I want to, do I? Yeah, maybe. Let's send me some Xanax. And like, I think he never did, which is like, thank God. But like, I knew he had access to pills. So yeah. And like, I was having a weird thing with a friend I was hanging out with a lot that, I, you know, developed some feelings for, and she did not reciprocate. So that was like a weird thing. So I was like, you know, talking through that with Rogoff too.
And he was going through his own,
thing. And then there was this, you know, a couple times he would text me, be like, hey, I'm thinking about checking myself into the hospital. The first time he told me that was like literally right before I was going to go on stage. Like, I was like, you know how like you're behind the curtain or whatever, and they're like, hey, please welcome to the stage. Like, that it was in that process. And I was just like, hey man, I'll give you a call in like 10 minutes. I can't, if it would have been like while someone else was on stage, I could be like, hey, I need to go deal with this. But there's like, cause you know, comedy is the most important thing you can do with your life.
Obviously.
And I texted him back. He didn't respond. I called him a couple of times. And then eventually he texted back like, oh, I fell asleep. And I was like, oh, thank God. There was another time, I think right before he died, where he's like, hey, I think I'm going to check myself into a hospital. And I was like, you know, why? And it was like a Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday. He's like, I'm going to check myself into the hospital on Thursday or Friday. And I was like, why Thursday or Friday? And he wanted to see his therapist on Thursday, which I think was the day that he was found, before he like checked himself into the hospital. Cause I guess he just wasn't doing well because he was going to go to a party that he knew that his ex was at. And I think that was messing him up. And then the next day I didn't text him because at the time I was running a show out of my garage. So that was like a show day. So the show day is usually like coordinating and getting the food and stuff for people. Yeah, so like, I didn't text. And like, I mean, normally by this point, like he would have texted, but I didn't even notice. And then, yeah, the next morning I just sent him a message of being like, hey, what's up? And like never read. And then that late afternoon, like 4 or 5 o'clock, I got some messages from David Citrick, a New York comic from Minneapolis. He was just like, hey man, can you call me? Like, he was like trying to call me on Facebook Messenger. Yeah. And I'm like, who the fuck calls? Like you know, something's fucked up when someone tries to call you on Facebook Messenger. And like, I was working and like, I saw that he called and I like ignored that. Cause at first I was like, oh, it's probably just a mistake or something. And two, I'm like, I'm at work.
Right.
And then when he's like, hey man, can you call me? Like, I want to talk to you. And like, I don't want to do it over text. And like, there wasn't necessarily a lot of hints that like Rogoff would be dying in any way, but somehow I just like knew. I was like, oh
yeah,
Rogoff's dead. This is at like 4:50 in the afternoon. I clock out at 5. So I just was like, I'll call you when I'm done with work. Kind of like in a way of just like putting it off, basically. Like, I don't want to know yet. So I like very meticulously closed up my workspace and then left the building and like called David. And like, yeah, he's like, you know, Rogoff's dead, basically.
Yeah.
And I got that news, and that was on a day that I have therapy, so I had to drive to therapy, which I guess in that way the timing worked out pretty well. But it was tandem parking, so I had to go back into the building and find this guy who's parked behind me, who's one of the lawyers. He's like, hey man, I need you to move your car. And he's like, okay, I'll meet you out there. So I'm like standing, like waiting for him to move his car, and then he comes out, and then he sees that my car still had Minnesota plates. He's like, oh man, I went to the University of Minnesota. And I'm just like,
Shut the fuck up.
Please shut the fuck up and leave.
Hey, go Vikes, huh? Skull. You're like, fucking dead.
And I'm not gonna fucking tell. I'm not a psychopath. Like, yeah, my best friend just died. And yeah, so like I just like drove to my therapist and like practically just fucking kicked the door in and be like,
right,
I got some fucking shit for you.
Toss me the Kleenex. I'm about to fucking
About an hour ago, just found out my best friend died. And like every once in a while you say or do something to a therapist and you can see the look of shock on their face. And that was one of them, which is just like you can see in her head, be like, oh, whatever I had planned for today is not what we're doing.
Yeah, you're like, cancel my next appointments.
Just I guess, okay, improv.
Right. And how does that make you feel? that your friend is dead.
Not good.
But have you considered that? But we all die. I need to get like the nihilist therapist. Just be like, yeah, but you know, someday we're gonna join them.
Therapist,
that'd be nice.
Smoking, just Daria, just smoking.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, 31 is a pretty good run. I don't know how old Rogoff was, but he was somewhere around
around 31. Rogoff also wasn't exactly sure how old he was because of the record keeping in India.
He's right.
He's like 31 or 32.
I feel like he leaned into the younger year.
I mean, in this business, you have to.
I've been doing comedy for how long have I been alive? I'm not sure. yeah, that was deeply unfortunate.
I mean, yeah, that shit was truly obliterative. Because, to have such a gaping absence, like truly, we were talking every day for like, I mean, the equivalent of probably like, you know, many hours a day where we were in some sort of contact, whether we're just, you know, just doing dumb bits or talking, like just constant chatter, you know, like I know some people get that from like tweeting their dumb thoughts. Like I would just text my dumb thoughts to like Rogoff or something and he would do the same.
Have a character in your life just no longer be there is kind of truly hard to comprehend.
It's extremely hard to comprehend, especially with the distance. It just feels a little more unreal. It's just like, oh, but like why aren't your little text bubble? Where's the text bubbles?
Right.
And that weekend I was supposed to go every spring, like in like San Diego, like there's a bunch of poppy blooms that are really cool. And I was supposed to go see them with a friend. And I wasn't quite ready to admit what had happened. So like, I mentioned to my friend, like, oh, Rogoff died. Cause she used to do comedy. She's like, oh fuck. And she's like, I assume you're not coming down. And I was like, no, I'm still going to go. And she's like, are you sure? Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And like, eventually I was like, I'm not coming.
Right.
But yeah, just the part of me is like, I'm just gonna keep going. And like, I thought I wasn't like, I had absolutely no money. I thought like, oh, I'm not going to be able to go to the memorial stuff in New York. But thankfully, Turner Barrowman, he just bought me a last minute flight to New York, which is very sweet. Cause a last minute flight from LA to New York is not cheap.
Right.
I didn't need check bags or anything, but like, it still is like flew out there. You know, just like barely functioning, like crying on the plane, which I was watching a movie at the time crying. And I think this is so funny because probably everyone saw me crying and just thought I was really moved by Wreck-It Ralph 2. Cause that's what I was watching.
Right.
It's like, damn dude, he's getting really affected by Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah. Really tied up all the loose ends left off in Wreck-It Ralph 1.
Yeah. A lot of questions. You know, got to the airport at like 1 a.m. or something, and like I was like sleep deprived, grief stricken. I like couldn't figure out the airport.
Yeah,
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out the transit. I like called David Citrick, like borderline crying, just like, I don't know what to do. So he called me an Uber that picked me up at the airport and brought it to his place. We just like sat there for a bit, and then Rogoff's sister got some hotel rooms, so I shared a hotel room with one of Rogoff's other friends, which is not a lot of sleeping, mostly just sad sobbing into pillows.
Sure.
In like a college roommate situation. God, I feel like I'm just giving like a pretty, I don't know why I'm suddenly being self-conscious. Like I'm just like giving like here's stuff that happened, but yeah,
that's literally
what it is. But I'm like, this is boring.
So let me ask you, what do you think you're getting out of doing the show Text for My Dead Friends?
What am I getting? I wrestle with that. I'm not sure. Like, in some ways, like going back and like rummaging through these old things, like it's kind of like, oh, I get to spend time with these friends again. Sure. So I think I'm getting that. I think just having to like organize things to be presentable as a show, I think helped me just organize my own thoughts and analyze my own thoughts and just feelings. I think that was really helpful. People respond very favorably to the show, which is just helpful and validating, I think.
Well, it's nice to know that this is such a universally relatable trait.
It's like such a universally relatable thing, and it's just not talked about. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, I don't know how your experience was after your dad died, but like at a certain point, people were like, why are you still sad? That was days ago, bro. It's like,
sure.
Like, yeah. And like, and just to have the reaction, people are like, oh, thanks for like making this space to talk about this.
Oh, absolutely. I've people that I've interviewed on the podcast, I ran into my friend Steven, and he was like, oh, a bunch of my friends and family members have listened to this and like kind of started a dialogue with us about this shit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool. If I could help facilitate that in any way, I'd love to just move the ball forwards on all of us trying to fucking get through.
Yeah.
A thing that affects us universally, you know,
I think affects us universally. I think especially after the past 2 years.
Oh yeah.
I think it's even more so very, very crazy making. I don't know if gaslighting is the right term, but it really feels like by the government and like pop culture, I really feels like just being gaslit. Like, but a million people just died,
right?
And they're like, fucking Doritos, bro, get them in your mouth. And I'm like, but a million.
Yeah, no, people we're making died. More Game of Thrones. We're doing more,
but a million people like, or like a TV show or whatever TV shows like would just, barely, like, you're lucky if you see someone wearing a mask in a TV show. Like, it's just not even mentioned. It's just insane. So like I really broke my brain after that one. I was lashing out to a lot of friends,
sure,
which most of them understood it. I talked a lot to another New York comic, Chloe Radcliffe. She was really helpful. Like, we were calling and texting a lot. She was actually on, when Rogoff died, she was on, I think, a trip to Brazil. So even though she was in Brazil with like, she didn't have like a international roaming, but like anytime she was near Wi-Fi, she would like text or call me, and that was really helpful.
Sure. Yeah, she's great. Shout out to Chloe.
I also at the funeral, like, I made it a point to be like, I got to look at the body. And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I needed to do that.
No, you don't have to do that.
I kind of thought it was the equivalent of being like, oh, it's like rubbing alcohol on a wound. Like, it's going to hurt, but it's going to help in the long term.
Yeah, rip the band-aid off. And you're like, now the band-aid's in my fucking nightmares.
Yeah, it did show up in my dreams for a while. And I like would close my eyes and like still see him. And like, I don't know who these people are that talk about funerals and be like, oh man, he looks so alive still. Like, nah, man.
No,
not at all.
He actually doesn't look like anything he ever looked like in life.
No, he looks wrong. He looks bad and wrong. Like, why'd you do this? He
fell into a tub of fucking, you know,
something,
canola oil or something.
Yeah.
Wow. He looks a lot shinier than I remember.
I don't remember him glistening this much.
Yeah.
He never glistened, but I don't really remember too much. Were you there for
It was in Bed-Stuy, actually far from, which is funny because like that funeral home is just like a landmark. I moved into an apartment a couple blocks away, and every time I went past, I was like, oh yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, a really sad Minneapolis comedy reunion here.
Sad reunion.
Yeah.
Were you there? I was outside, and then everyone started laughing and whatnot. Were you there when they, played Bombs Over Baghdad?
Yeah.
Turner had set up the,
I think I mentioned that on my interview with Patrick Bauer, but yeah, it was funny. It was like Weezer, it was all of like, you know, a lot of
fucking Roundhouse favorite yeah, songs.
I forgot like, there was Weezer.
It was Weezer. What was it? I'm alive. I can't. And then it was like Bombs Over Baghdad. And I was like,
yeah,
yes, this is great.
Nah, man, that playlist kicked ass. That was a good playlist.
Yeah.
Top tier. I need Turner to make a playlist for my funeral.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, back home, I was messed up. I think I remember texting Chloe, just didn't feel right. I just felt like I described it as feeling like a ghost haunting my own life, like just like completely.
Yeah.
Just like after something as devastating as that, like you just go outside and you're like, everything just looks different. Like the sun just like feels weird and hurts, but like everything's fine, but it just looks different.
Well, it's also like the entire world's still going on and they don't know that you just lost your, your sense of reality. And they're like, well, you're still in your light just turned green. Get the move.
Get out. You know? Yeah. Get out. Like,
and you're like, no, but what do you mean the light turned green? My Rogoff's dead.
Rogoff's like, who the fuck's Rogoff? Like, fair enough.
You're like, well,
there was a point where I like found a monastery that I was like, oh, maybe I'll join this monastery. They said they have a work program. It wasn't until later that I was like, oh, that's a cult. I almost joined a cult.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's called Scientology.
It wasn't Scientology, but it didn't have the brand recognition. Scientology would have, I think, been a good move, honestly. Yeah. Instead of this, I've tried looking it up since for the show. It does not exist. Probably got raided by the FBI or something.
Right.
But yeah, almost joined a cult.
Hmm. Well,
yeah, just a mess,
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fucking bummer, man. Life sucks. Rest in peace, all our friends.
Rest in peace, all our friends. I think this one I need to look up the original texts, which maybe I should have done on my computer.
Scov's thing,
baby.
Okay.
Yeah. So the last thing we're talking about was I'm going to see my therapist on Thursday, and he's like, I'm probably going to see my ex at this party tomorrow night. And I'm like, oh man, that's rough. I sent that at 7:19 p.m. on March 12th. Then March 12th at 11:12 p.m. he just said, love you, bud. And then I wrote, I love you too, dog. Life just sucks sometimes, I guess. And that's the last message that he saw.
That's tough, man.
Yeah, had I known it was gonna be the last message, I don't know if I would have wrote I love you too, dog.
Yeah, well, listen, the society that we live in, any sort of sentimentality, especially among dudes, is kind of layered projected irony. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just
because if you're too earnest, that'd be gay, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I love you, but like, I have to. Yeah. Yeah. I have to like throw a bro on the end of it just to make sure that you don't think I'm like trying to fuck you.
Yeah.
I just really value your friendship, and I'm not going to realize how much I miss you until you're already gone, bro.
Bro, it's not sexual, dude.
It's like,
bro,
listen, dog, I'm going to write a fucking one man play about our text. That's how much you mean to me, doggy.
No homo.
Yes, of course. Well, I kind of have that. That's a default. You know how some people have like sent from an iPhone. I have that on all my text. It's just sort of attached at the bottom.
No homo.
Well, I type it in manually, but yes.
Type it in manually.
Sent from a heterosexual iPhone.
Straight as hell, dude.
Well, it's nice that you said, even if it wasn't couched in a little bit of, maybe playful sarcasticness, it's nice that the last thing you said to him was, I love you.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm glad the last exchange that we had was us telling each other that we love each other. I would go back and stare at that. I'd look at those a lot in those first couple months.
Sure. Yeah, it's too bad. It's really fucking unfortunate. You should have had more time. But
it should have been Mitch McConnell, man.
I always say that. I'm like, why couldn't it have been Mitch McConnell?
Why do all these people die who aren't Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually usually go to Henry Kissinger. That's my go-to because the guy's like 96.
Henry Kissinger is a good one.
Yeah. That'd be fun. Why couldn't it have been Young Sheldon?
Young is Young Siri, is Young Sheldon still on?
Yeah.
I don't think I have Siri set up.
That's okay.
I'll just let that question go unanswered.
Yeah, they could. This is live. Didn't I tell you? This is all live.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, right. Editing, schmediting. Okay. So now you're back to doing the show.
Yeah, back doing the show. Did it a couple weeks ago.
When's the next one? And how frequent do you project that you might be doing this?
So that's the hard part, is that like the week before the show is pretty emotionally taxing, because there's a lot of like preparing or like rehearsing, like, you know, looking through this 400 some slideshow. Like,
sure. Yeah.
It's not always fun to go back to this.
Oh, I know.
Content. So like it basically kind of puts a real bad patina on the week leading up to it. And like the day of is pretty, pretty brutal.
Do you just reflect on your memories of your friends for the week before? Cause honestly, the only preparation I do for this podcast is I will just sort of think about my dead friends. Or in this case, I, you know, spent the afternoon, a little bit of the afternoon, just thinking about my experiences with Rogoff and who he was to me. But you do kind of have to sort of force yourself into a mindset that is not the most comfortable necessarily.
Yeah. And I think with time that'll just get easier. Excuse me, I'm drinking seltzer water now. I'm burpy.
It's okay.
Leave it in.
I don't edit.
I don't even know how. I have all this software and I'm like, why do I have this? No, it's hard. So like I don't have like a next show planned.
Sure.
I think it would do well at like festivals, so I need to look into that. I've thought about just maybe doing, because every time I post, I have a lot of people in like Minnesota or New York like, oh, come do it here, like in Chicago. Sure. Or whatever. And it's like, I'd love to, but financially I can't necessarily go traveling to other countries. Like I have a job now that I can't just like disappear from for a week. I thought maybe should just do a Zoom version of it, just let people.
No, I feel like the live's better. Recording of the live performance is what you should do.
Yeah. Had a recording the first time I did it, but the problem is that I would need to get it recorded by someone who like would know how, because there's like a whole, like there's the PowerPoint part. So like,
yeah.
The way the, like the lighting works is like the camera is either going to try and like make me look good or the PowerPoint.
If anything, you should have like edit the PowerPoints into and intersect it with the live.
Yeah. And I thought about doing that. And then, but the audio is just not quite there. I don't know. I should just record a live one, put it on TikTok or something.
I would say you sort of not having an idea of when your next one is kind of the mode that I do my podcast in. I don't know if you listen to the last one. I go next one in a week or two. I haven't released a podcast in about 5 weeks.
Was the last one the Zach?
Was Zach?
One?
Yeah. And Zach was great. He really made it easy for me. But yeah, I don't know who my next people are. I have about 4 or 5 people that I have tentatively booked, but sometimes. I don't know. You know, some people want to do it, but they only want to do it in person. And I don't really have the
setup.
I have all the equipment. I just don't have, I don't know how to fucking put it together. I'm like a caveman with like flint and stone and a microphone for some reason. And I'm like, I know that I have the capability to make fire.
But how?
Right. But so, yeah. And it's also like, you know, you have the full control over what you're going to book your show for, but it is also like an emotionally exhausting thing.
The other thing is that like at this last show, maybe a couple over 12 people came, which is like, it was 6 o'clock at Santa Monica on a Saturday, which was like the venue was thrilled. They were like, this is the most people we've ever seen at this time slot. And I was like, okay. But like, because it's such a personal thing, you know, just anytime you do a show, there's going to be people to say like, yeah, I'm 100% going to be there. And then they don't come. And like and that's fine, but it feels so much worse in this situation.
I mean, as much as it sucks to do comedy for 3 people, when you're doing comedy, that's also very personal and sentimental and about your dead friends, you're like,
yeah,
fuck, are you guys only staying here because there's only three of you? Like, are you staying here because you're feeling pressure of the social situation?
Yeah.
And then I'm like in my own head about not even really focusing on the material itself.
Yeah. Besides, this is the third time I've done the show. A lot of repeat people that are like friends of mine. And I was like, I don't know how to get strangers to this show.
Yeah.
This podcast is going to bring people to the show.
Yeah. You'll get the big bump. I mean, we are building. I feel like more and more times the people that do reach out to me are people that are strangers that see I fucking flash these signs.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's honestly the most validating. Someone who hit me up and he was just like, hey man, death sucks, man. Every Mother's Day, I text all my friends, text your mom because I can't.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool. Thanks for reaching out to me, man. This made me feel less alone. And
yeah.
And he specifically said, like, I'm really enjoying hearing about stories about your father. And I'm like, fuck, I hadn't even considered that people might hear some of my anecdotes. And then his memory will live on in sort of just in the lore that is storytelling.
Yeah.
So,
man, I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. I've already ate up like an hour and a half. Like, I feel like I could talk about this for days. So like,
yeah, it's kind of, for the sake of the audience, we should not keep going with this, right. But it's nice to facilitate an environment where you're like, oh, I can relate to your opinion. You can relate to mine.
Yeah.
You also only have 12 people at the shows that you promote all month. It's like you're speaking into my ear, which is not an expression. We'll edit that one out later.
No, make it an expression. Use that as the Instagram sizzle reel.
You're speaking in my ear.
Right in my ear, baby.
If that's
right.
Not a blurb on your next one, I know you got Maria Bamford below. You should be like, podcaster Michael Walsh. It's like you're speaking in my ear.
Yeah. The first time I did the show was I had set up a projector and a screen at Maria's house.
Oh, nice.
Because she's like, anyone that wants to run a show can do it at my house. And I was like, I have a show. And that was interesting.
That was the very first one ever?
A very first one ever of this iteration, at least. There was the 2019 version.
Okay.
Which was, I mean, personally, I don't even think it was that good because it just kind of like peters out. It's just kind of like less 10 minutes, just kind of like done. Like kind of like me right now with this podcast. Hey, yeah, like, yeah, I don't know what to.
This is a gentle touchdown.
Yeah.
I do appreciate you telling me about all your unfortunate grief. These are all great people. It's nice to remember them.
Yeah. It is nice to remember them and just to talk about them, because I don't get to talk about like Marina in my day, like, oh, sure. My friend really liked that. She's dead now.
Right. Yeah. Well, first of all, nobody wants to hear about your problems, but like where I work at a place where there's a lot of tourists. So I find every time people are like, oh, they're from Chicago. The other day I was like, oh yeah, my dad was from Chicago. And they're like, what part? And I was like, I just said that in the past tense. And I was like, why the fuck am I bringing my dad to these tourists? Yeah. What am I going to be? Oh yeah. He took me to the Sears Tower 16 years ago. He's dead now. Anyway, right this way. Like,
anyway,
and then I'm like, part of me wants to find the common link. Cause part of me is like, oh, my dad was from Oak Park. You're from Chicago. He exists in my memory and he's still, never mind. This is just not, this is an anecdote that's only pertinent to me.
No, it's nuts. When at Marina's funeral, The Flash was one of her favorite comic book superheroes. So someone made like all these little pins with the Flash's symbol on them. And I like for like months had it on me every day. People were like, oh shit, dude, you love the Flash? And I'd be like, nah, but my dead friend did. And they'd be like, oh.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Here's your Chipotle burrito. Yeah. I don't need to ruin this person's, they're just trying to make small, this Trader Joe's cashier is just trying to make mandatory small talk. Like, why am I doing this to them?
Right. Do you have another show? Do you have an upcoming grief?
I don't have another show. It's the same problem. It's like after every time I do a show, I'm like, I never want to do that again. And then like a month or two will go by. I'm like, I want to do that show again.
Yeah.
Which makes promoting that much harder.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah, I got nothing to promote. I'm just here for the vibes, my guy.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Well, rest in peace, Margoff and Kate and Marina and Gus and Bill.
Mm-hmm.
your other friends who I forgot.
Samantha. All Zach. Good people. I don't think I said his name, but Zach.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing this story. People at home that are listening, follow Patrick wherever you can find him on social media. Patrick Sussmelch.
Yeah, follow me. I'm going to be real with you. I don't post very often, but come to my Instagram, the_Patrick_Sussmelch, and you'll see some really poorly framed photos, but in a really high resolution because I got that iPhone 14 Pro, baby.
Right. Yeah. And look out for your show in the future.
Yes.
I mean, assume you plan to do it at least sometime in the future.
Sometime in the future, at an indeterminate point in the future.
Fair. Fair. All right, Patrick. Well, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for sharing all this shit.
Thanks for having me.
So that was episode 12. I want to thank Patrick for sharing his story. Shout out to everybody who's been listening to the podcast. Keep doing that. I appreciate it. If you enjoy this, feel free to write a review, like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram at I'll Grieve You With This Podcast. And yeah, stay tuned. Next episode coming in the tentative future. Be good to yourselves. Goodbye.